Welcome to Head Start, a podcast for race directors and the business of putting on races. Last week, if you happened to join us for part one of our two-part Facebook Ads podcast special, we set the scene for you by looking at Facebook marketing strategy, understanding sales funnels, planning and structuring ad campaigns, and mastering audience targeting. Well, this week, in part two of the discussion, it's time to switch gears a bit and look at some more advanced topics around ad creatives, ad performance monitoring and optimization, and the very important highly converting area of ad retargeting. Joining me again this week to discuss Facebook ads is Event Growth CEO Andy Riley, and what a great pleasure it is to have Andy back on the podcast. So stick around for an awesomely interesting discussion full of real-life marketing tips and insights. We're going to jump into all that in just a sec, but before we do that, a quick shout out to the amazing sponsors supporting this podcast. Many thanks to RunSignUp, Race Director's favorite all-in-one technology solution for endurance and fundraising events, now powering more than 26,000 in-person, virtual, and hybrid events. And many thanks to RaceCheck, whose free RaceCheck review box widget can help you collect and showcase your participant feedback on your own website, helping you more easily convert website visitors into paying participants. We'll be hearing a little bit more from these two great companies a bit later in the podcast, but now let's dive into part two of our Facebook ad special with Event Growth's Andy Riley. Andy, great to have you back on the podcast.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks a lot for coming back and for being so generous with your time. It's your third time on the podcast, and our listeners so far are really enjoying our episodes with you on marketing. So thank you very much for that. We're not going to do too much of introductions because we've done this a couple of times, but some people in the audience may not be familiar with you and your work. Do you mind just reminding everyone quickly about who you are and what you do in the industry?
Yeah, so I run Event Grow, which is a marketing agency. And what we do is we help race directors, event directors of all kinds of different types of endurance events. We help them grow their event through digital marketing. So we're helping them with their social media marketing, their strategy, running ads for them on the different platforms, and really just trying to grow the race. And so that's what we focus on. And personally, I've been doing that for over 10 years and with the agency for 4 years.
Awesome. Which is really relevant for today. You always keep forgetting to mention RacePlace, which I think is also a very cool aspect of what you do. And I think you should, because it's an awesome website. You want to tell people a little bit about that?
Yes. RacePlace is kind of where I got started after I used to work at active.com. Thank you for that. RacePlace is an event calendar. You can go to find events, mostly events in the United States, but we pull in events from a lot of the different providers. So runners that are looking for races to do, we organize them on a calendar and they can find them. And then race directors that are looking to reach runners, they can promote via different ads that we run on that site. And so about 180,000 visitors per month. And so a decent amount, and in mostly Southern California, raceplace.com. Check it out.
Absolutely. Check it out and go at your race on that, because it's free to do so. It's got a really great design, good amount of organic traffic. It's only going to take you a few minutes to add your race on that. So I think you should, if you're in the US and haven't done so already. So Facebook ads, we broke this into two parts because it's really, there's too many things to talk about there. If listeners haven't listened to the first part of this, you should go back and do that. That was the episode just before this, where we discussed some really basic concept around Facebook ads. We discussed sales funnels, boosting posts using the Facebook Ads Manager. And we also went through all the steps of setting up ad campaigns and also ad targeting, which is a big part of getting successful ads on Facebook, fine-tuning that, making sure that you reach the right running audience or whatever your audience may be in the right area. And moving into part two today, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the ad itself, creatives and content. And then we're going to look at strategy optimization and high-level steering your campaign once it gets going. So we're going to be talking about budgeting, which we touched a little bit on in the first episode, monitoring performance, and also retargeting in slightly more depth than we did in episode one. So let's get started with creatives and the ad itself. So if people want to link to the previous episode, we discussed a lot about campaigns and targeting. And now let's sort of like zoom in into ads a little bit. And I was going through one of your run sign-up symposium presentations from a couple of years back where you discuss Facebook ad creatives. And one of your comments there that I'd like to get a little bit more color on from you is, it said, highlight the desirable after state in quotes. So what's that all about?
The after state is in effect the image or the imagery of the person after they've received the product, the service, or whatever it is. And so the idea in marketing is you're trying to move somebody from a before state to an after state. I'll give you an example. The before state for an event, it would be you're looking for something to do. You're looking to get active, not that you're inactive, but you're looking for an event, and that event is going to provide you with something that's going to bring you joy, happiness. It's going to make you better as a human. And so the before state would be me before the event. And it doesn't mean that I'm unhappy. It just means that I need to be able to have that event to kind of give me something, to provide me something. The after state would be naturally for an event would be them at the finish line. So when I say after state, the after state would be that the finish line shot to me is the best after state shot because it shows them there's either pain, there's usually joy, there's happiness, and you actually get it in the photo. And so we always try to use those photos in our marketing. Another after state could be for an event is if they're having fun. So if they're like, for example, if it's something like the color run, you know, you could show an image of somebody just kind of running around, jumping around, having fun. That's in effect a part of an after state of like they've received this product and this product has made them feel this way, which is I'm smiling. If you could see me, I'm smiling, but that's their after state.
So you want basically, which I think I've heard more generally in the context of marketing more generally, you want to be showing people in the state that they sort of like put themselves in the shoes of the person in the ad kind of thing, right? And they sort of get some of that emotional high, almost like, you know, seeing someone running, seeing an image of someone smiling into the camera while they run the race probably works better than, you know, like having, say, a drone shot of like your start line with 10,000 people, you know, like 10,000 dots moving through kind of thing, right? You want to be seeing humans, emotions, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I would say if you were to measure kind of an after state shot versus something like a drone shot, I would say I'd rather use the after state shot. Now, a drone shot can be advantageous because what that can do is that could show something, that could show scale. So sometimes we try to show scale of an event to give it some social clout to say, wow, this is a sizable event. Other people are doing this. I might want to look into it, which is another kind of the marketing psychology things, is social proof, basically. But if contrast, I would say if I only had two images and one was an after state, one was a drone shot, I would use the after state shot in my ads.
Yeah, we should say to people that the very first episode we did together on the podcast was on marketing psychology. And if people haven't listened to that, they should definitely go back and do that, which is actually why we did that first. We discussed lots of concepts around social proof, other psychological triggers that play well in ads, scarcity, authority, all of that stuff, which is really important. One question we got in the group from Sherry Lanios, I hope I pronounced this correctly, in our Race Directors Hub on Facebook, is whether ads should aim to sell a specific aspect of a race, like location or the venue or the swag or the PB potential. So basically focus on one thing, or whether through the ads you should try to basically sell the race in a more rounded way, like more generally. Should you focus on one single specific message or try to sell the whole concept?
When you're writing an ad, you only have so many characters in the copy. You only have so much space in the image and so much time in a video. So I think the essence is, what should I put in there? Sometimes it's better to do less than more in terms of the ad. So for example, if I have an image ad, a square image ad, think of Instagram, the square image format, and I have a description area, which I'm told I should do less than 125 characters. In Facebook, we try to do less than 125 characters per what they're telling us that we should do for optimization. Then I know, okay, here is the available space that I have. Now, what do I want to talk about? And what we do is anytime we work with an event, we'll sit down and actually create a list of highlights of the event, of what we believe are the things that sell the event to other runners. And so we already kind of know what those things are. And I would highly suggest any event director, before you write your ads, to do this, to sit down and say, what are the things that either people from our survey had told us of why they do our event? What are those things? Let's write them down. Let's highlight them. And then when you go write ads, you know, if you can fit the top one or two or three things in an ad, you have enough space or time to do it in your creative or your format, then you could do that. But if you don't have enough, a lot of space, it might be better to write a few different ads and just have one highlight. Like, let's say you run over a very specific part of your course that's beautiful, that's by the ocean or it's by a body of water. And that is one of the biggest highlights that people have. I would create an image that shows that. I would create copy that matches that. And I would just leave it at that. I wouldn't try to do too much else. And then I'd have my call to action. That's how I would think about that, is what's the format that I'm using and how much space do I have with an ad? Now, with an email, it's a little different, right? Because you actually have more space. So with an email, maybe you take your top 3 to 5 highlights, but I wouldn't go too much more than that, because remember, it's tough to get people to convert. You need to kind of get to the point pretty quickly when we're talking about ads. Now, when they get to your website, that's a little different, right? You have a plenty of time and space, both length and space, to create copy that's going to sell them. When we talk about an ad, we need to get them to make a decision. And so I think less is more.
And I guess the benefit of splitting out individual selling points in individual ads is that people who view the ads are going to vote with their engagement, right? They're going to tell you which bit of those 5 things, of those 5 different ads, they respond best to, because you're going to see that ad doing better, performing better, and Facebook is going to be putting it out more often.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's actually a good point. You're kind of testing a little bit what you think you know with why people do your race with something like that. If you have different highlights that you're testing against each other, then yeah, that you would get information back to show, okay, these validate our opinions here, or maybe they don't.
And speaking of the creative, you also had, I think, a really interesting point there, which is, I mean, it's fairly obvious, but it's easy to forget sometimes, that the image and the copy need to match themselves, right? So they need to sort of like go hand in hand. What you're saying with words should match what the person is seeing on the creative, right? Which I guess is something that people often don't do very well in their ads.
Yeah, I see this a lot. This is called ad congruency. If the copy doesn't match what you're seeing in the creative, what happens is our brain looks at that and it kind of does a little bit of a twitch. There's a little bit of a, I don't like this. I don't quite know how to digest this. Whereas if it's the opposite and the image and what's happening in the image kind of matches an aspect of the copy, then that congruency, when we see that as consumers, we like that. Our brains like processing that, and it actually delivers more clicks. And so there's a little bit of psychology stuff going on there, but you always want to try to have your creative, your image, or your video match your copy and be congruent.
And I guess from your comments earlier on copy length, you're not a big fan of those long form ads I see sometimes on Facebook where you click on it. They're a lot more common these days. And basically, it's like a full page of text there or something, right? Someone trying to go through a story and convince you, and like really, really too much information in the text. Do you ever see that in ads in our space, like promoting races? And is there a place for it? Or should people just stick with a short form, be really concise, 120 characters or so?
We haven't had a ton of success with the direct response ads that are trying to get people to sign up with long form copy in the description area. I never would like to say that it's not something that could succeed. I don't think you should ever say never. You just continue to test, but we haven't had success with it. I would estimate that it wouldn't be terribly successful for a direct response ad for people that run endurance races. We wouldn't do it because of that reason. However, there might be instances where it might make sense. For example, there might be a race director like letter or something that you'd want to write that's very in a very impassioned type of message. I've saw some during the pandemic, and I guess those kind of wouldn't be ads in effect, but there, I guess there could be an area where you would utilize that. But when I'm thinking of Facebook ads and Google ads and stuff like that, I would keep it to 125 characters in the description or less.
And for the creative, people have been advocating for the greater use of video in ad creatives for a while. People say an image is 1,000 words, a video is 1,000 images kind of thing. And if you can and have a good video to use, use that. What's your opinion on the use of videos? Are they successful compared to images? Are they better? What's a good length for them? What should be in them? Have you guys been using that in the agency for your clients?
We've used video for some time now. And video, even many years ago, people were talking about video being kind of the future. And I mean, we're in the future now, and video is still talked about as the future. So video is definitely something folks should use. I think the challenge with video has always been, you know, I don't have the resources to create the video or edit the video. And so there are a ton of tools that make it easier now to create video. How long do we recommend for video? 15 seconds or less typically for Facebook is a good marker to shoot for. For longer form video than that, you know, you could go 20, 30 seconds, but for most folks, 15 seconds is going to be a good place. And it's also what Facebook likes. But you can use some very basic tools to create video. I'll give you an example. There's a tool called Canva, which is very popular in the United States. Is it popular?
Yeah, it's very popular. I mean, I'm aware of it, and lots of people use it in the UK and other places as well.
So Canva is a great tool that it's very easy. In fact, my mom uses it. I just bought her a membership. She loves it. She like does all of her you know, birthday cards on it and stuff. And she can use it pretty well. So you can use it. My mom's crushing it on Canva. We can do this. So Canva, you can upload even just images, and you can create a simple slideshow of those images. And you can create the timing of it, 15 seconds, and export and get that out pretty quickly. We're talking about within 10 minutes, do this. So you can, you know, let's say people that don't even have video creative, you could create a video of basically slideshow images where you add 10 images and you kind of slide them or create movement with them with Canva. It lets you turn it into a video and you export it. That is going to perform better than just uploading those images, because Facebook looks at video, and video just performs markedly better on that platform. That's where I would start. Is if you haven't started at all, you could start there. And that's actually a very feasible starting point for somebody that's not a video expert. You could be a video newbie and get involved that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about using a slideshow versus, you know, say something like a carousel of images, which is also another format that you have available for you. Because as you say, Facebook, particularly in the old days when it was pushing hard on video, it would actually give a bonus, like a rich bonus to video. So it would help your video, even if it's just, as you said, like just a bunch of images woven together into a short video. Facebook will try and push that harder than just an ad that's made up of an image. So for a video like that, like a 15-second video, are we talking 15 seconds of the race story? So people before the race, at the start line, throughout the race, and then the finish line kind of thing? Is that what you'd focus on?
Well, if you have 15 seconds, you can think about, okay, in 15 seconds, how many scenes can I hit in a video? I don't want to overdo it. I know my length, it's 15 seconds. You can kind of think of, okay, how many different areas on course or different clips could I fit in that time without it being too much? When you start to get to plus more than 5 clips for a 15 second spot, then that's, you know, you're having to shuffle through those pretty quickly. And so I'd say try to shoot for, you know, at a maximum 5 clips, or even just one clip of a highlight of your course. And then think about your copy. So let's say the ad is, I'm going to cover 2 of my highlights. I run by the water and I have a great medal. Do I have video clips of them running by the water and video clips of the medal or pictures? And then what I would do is I would take those 2 scenes that I'm marketing, and I'd have a transition at about, you know, 6-7 seconds, which is halfway through the video. And I'd go from highlight 1 to highlight 2. And then at the end, I'd put a call to action. So the call to action at the end should always be telling them what to do. People want to actually be told what to do when they look at an ad. So at the end, I'd put register here or whatever the messaging is. And that's kind of how I would think about that is once again, match the video up with your copy And that could actually give you an idea as to what you should put in your video. Because you don't just want to put, you know, random everything in your video. It's a lot to digest. And so that's why these shorter videos are great, because as a producer, you're a video producer now, you don't have to think about how many, I got to have to fill 30 seconds. Like, that's a lot. No, you just have to fill 10 or 15. And so you could think maybe one, two, or three clips, and you could achieve it that way.
Well, and of course, I guess, whether it's video or just a straight image, you should aim to incorporate in that ad key race information, like the name of the race, the location of the race, and the date, right? So just people can immediately know whether they're interested in taking part or not. I guess in a video, you can put it at the end. I've seen it in some teasers, basically, that, you know, like at the end, you have like a banner where you say, that's our race, says, you know, like January 16th. What's the best practice around incorporating that very key information that people often miss on their race websites as well, and it's really frustrating, on an ad so that people can see that? Would you put it in the ad title, basically in the header, in the description, in the help text? There's different areas you can add that. How would you make sure that information is available to the people who see the ad?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because it does get overlooked. And I think on a previous show, we talked about how we don't see that information on websites, and we hear about it very quickly. I would say either put it at the beginning of your video or at the end of your video. It's as simple as, I don't think you have to put the location. I think you can put city, state maybe, but I would absolutely put the date. And then you don't have to use your event name, just use your logo, right? Because then you capture a little bit of brand recognition with the logo. Add the date though. I would definitely add the date, because if you're trying to induce a click, it's almost information that they, like, if they don't have the date, what you're going to do is you're going to see people in the comments writing, when is this? All right. Like, I didn't want, like, if they're on Facebook and you're asking them to leave Facebook, it has to be compelling, and they have to have that information. And so definitely put the date at the beginning or the end. If you want, you could put the city, state, because then it gives them some context, especially if they live in a different state and you're trying to market over there. And then use your logo. And then in the ad copy, the written copy, I like to try to use the event date either in the copy or in the headline. And so we're actually duplicating the event date just in case they wanted to click before the end of the video and they wanted that information. And so I like to check that box and make sure that we include it there.
Okay. So I think that takes us through all the way to the end of the setting up an ad campaign and writing a decent ad process. Hopefully people got a lot of tips from that and our discussion on part one of this podcast. Let's change gears a little bit and go back to strategy and the high level. And let's talk a little bit about budgeting. I'm going into trying to create a campaign. Let's say I've just opened up for registrations. I have several weeks or months ahead of me to race day. How should I think about spending my marketing budget? Let's assume that there is a figure that I came up with that, you know, I want to put $1,000 on Facebook. How should I pace that? How much should I be spending? And how should I plan my budget allocation in my head?
Yeah, it's a good question. First, you'll want to have an overall marketing budget set for your event, right? So if you're going to want to know what that is. And then you look at that budget and you say, okay, which channels, Facebook, Google, are we going to spend this on? And so we always break down the budget by total budget and then by how much we want to put in each channel. And we usually just do a rough percentage. You know, typically Facebook's going to get 40 to 50% of the total marketing budget for most of our clients. And so now we have that. That kind of gives us a number, right? And so let's say that number, just for ease of sake, is $10,000. So now we have $10,000 and we have 6 months to market. We have 6 months until the event happens. Okay, so we have $10,000 for Facebook and then 6 months to do it. And so if you wanted to, you could just, to keep it simple, what you could do is you could just divide the amount of time you have by the budget and run that budget evenly through the course of those months leading up to your event. That would be a very simplified way to do it. And we've done that before. Or another way to do it would be to say, well, you know, people travel for, it's a marathon and we know people need to travel, so they need to sign up a little sooner. So what we would do is maybe we would front load our budget, meaning the first 3 months we would spend more than say the last 3 months. And we would look at it that way. And so it's not a perfect science, but you could kind of partition your budget in the months that you know that you're going to need to do the most marketing. And you know your event better than anybody, but if it's a longer distance race, I'm sure anyone listening knows if it's a longer distance race, then you know that, you know, further along out, 4, 6, maybe even 7 months for a marathon, for a long distance triathlon, people are going to be looking to sign up. So you're going to need to be marketing then versus a 5K, 10K, you know, those, you know, 90% of your sales come in, what, a month, 2 months before your event. And so we like to just at a simple level, look at partitioning it evenly or slightly front loading it. And that'll give you a number and say, okay, in May, we know the max we want to spend is $2,000, right? And that's where we start. And then we create a campaign for May and we cap it at $2,000. And Facebook lets you set caps so that you don't go over that cap, right? And then you can also set a duration of the ad. And so it doesn't go past that duration. And so now we've set our limiter for that particular campaign and that time frame for our budget. We know we won't go over budget. So that's how I would suggest that you go through that process so that it'll allow you to make sure you don't go over budget.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point and a very obvious one you made earlier about if you want to market a marathon, you shouldn't be spending money 2 or 3 weeks out from the event. Someone who trains for a marathon, most people, you know, they take, you know, they're on a like a standard 16-week training plan or something. You know, they would have decided to join the race way before that. While you were saying all that, one interesting point that came to mind from a discussion we had actually on this podcast a while back with Johanna Good from Run Sign Up, looking at some statistics, is that some stupendously high amount of people seem to register around price increases and stuff like that, or like early birds, or like those points where prices change, like something like within the next 4 days before a price increase, something like 25% of registrations or something crazy was happening. Does it make sense to focus sort of lots of money around those specific points to basically go a little bit overweight on marketing dollars on those things?
So if you run, let's say, a Facebook ad that's called a price increase campaign, it makes sense to allocate, let's say you have a monthly stipend of $2,000 and you know you have a price increase at the end of that month. If you were just going to run one campaign and then it's a price increase campaign, well, then that answers your question. You're going to spend all $2,000 on that. And I think that is completely fine to do because you're right. You will drive considerably more sales with a price increase Facebook ad than you would with one that didn't have a price increase or a discount because of all that we talked about before, that data is already there. They're going to sign up. But let's say you had another campaign that you wanted to run that was non-discount, just general ad, and you had $2,000 to spend. I would probably make sure that price increase campaign gets at least half of your available budget for that month because it's going to drive sales. But it is wise too, though, to spend and make sure that you're spending on campaigns that aren't necessarily always promotions or price increase campaigns, because you do want people to learn and understand more about your event without it being always just price increase messaging, right?
Yeah.
So if you have the flexibility to have more than one campaign, then that's great. If you only can have one campaign, then I would say, yes, it would probably be wise to run a price increase ad and use most of your budget for that.
So if you have been using Facebook ads to market your race, you know that one of the most important things to keep track of is revenue attribution, which is to say, being able to tell how many conversions, that is race registrations in your case, you get from the money you spend on Facebook ads. Now, tracking conversions from Facebook can be done with the help of the Facebook Pixel, which is a little bit of code that Facebook provides that you have to add to your website to be able to track what actions Facebook users clicking on your ads take on your website. But what happens when people register off your website on your registration platform? When your registration platform is run sign up, there's nothing to worry about, because you can easily install your Facebook pixel to all pages of your custom run sign up website from your run sign up Race Director dashboard. And after you do that, Run Signup will be sending Facebook all the right event data Facebook needs to correctly attribute registrations to the right Facebook ad campaign. What's more, if you also fundraise through your race, Run Signup will also track and send to your Facebook ads account data about your race donations, so you can accurately link not only registrations, but also donations back to individual Facebook ad campaigns. Of course, like with all tools on Run Signup, you get all this absolutely free with your standard Run Signup Race Director account. And you can learn more about this and other amazing Run Signup features available to you by visiting runsignup.com. That's runsignup.com. One of the many, many reasons over 26,000 events are using Run Signup's industry-leading technology to take their races to the next level. Okay, let's get back to the episode. Next up, figuring out your customer acquisition cost. Besides your total budget allocation, which is a very important number to come up with and stick to, another very important number, I guess, for your Facebook ad planning is your target cost per conversion, your target cost of acquisition. And we mentioned some concepts at the start of the previous episode around return on ad spend and that kind of stuff, but I think it's really important to go into it a little bit here as well. How should people be thinking about their setting a target cost for acquiring customers through Facebook ads?
Well, first, in order to even use this, you know, feature in any platform, you have to know what that is. So you have to have an idea as to what is your baseline target acquisition cost. And if you don't know what that is, that's okay. What you then would do is you'd actually start to run ads, run Facebook ads, and run conversion focused Facebook ads. So the objective of the ad is conversions, and run a couple different ads and try to get through, you know, a couple months of ads out into the market. Then you can actually go in and look at the metrics and you can see what the cost per acquisition was. So you can actually see the data and go, okay, here is what I was overall paying to target this customer. And if you have a significant amount of data in there, and I would say significant would be, you know, 2 to 4 months at least, I'd imagine even in that time you spent maybe $500 or more, $1,000, $1,500, then you could start to get a little bit of an accurate or at least a starting point of what it does cost you to acquire a customer. So in order to use the feature, you need that information first. And so I say, once you do have that information, you can start to test out ads and put in a target acquisition cost. And I would say when you use that feature, it's a great feature to make sure that you're not spending too much to acquire a customer in Facebook. It'll actually keep your return on ad spend up because you're not overspending based upon what you know you can spend to get somebody. However, the caveat is, you know, you might not drive as many total conversions as a result because Facebook is saying no to the people that, you know, are $2 above your target cost. Typically, we won't even use that feature in Facebook. We'll test it out a little bit because we very closely manage the return on ad spend. And so that we're kind of using that as a metric, but it is good to know. You really do want to know what it costs to acquire a customer. And then I would kind of test out some campaigns with that in there.
Well, that's an interesting point because basically you're saying that run some ads on Facebook and let that cost per acquisition work itself out of your results. But I guess you also have, I guess you could go also the other direction and say, I know what my costs for running the race is. I know what my unit margin is per registration. The gross entry fee is $80. All things spent, you know, I'm going to make $30 net or something. I guess from that, you could derive a cost of acquisition that you can afford, couldn't you? And sort of like work backward. However successful my campaigns may be or not, it only makes sense for me out of those $30 to spend $7 on marketing or something. Does that work as an approach?
It does. That's a great technical aspect, a way of approaching all of this stuff. It doesn't perfectly work out that way in the real world, though, because what each platform has a different cost per acquisition. I pay a different amount on Google than I do on Facebook. And so when you're trying to drive a sale, if you do that, what I've seen happen, customers that have done that without having a ton of data or just doing that solely, is that they don't drive enough conversions as a whole. Because when you put that limiter inside the platform, what it's telling Facebook is, my target acquisition cost is $10. Facebook, when it sees an $11 person, it won't sell, right? And so sometimes you could get people at a lower one, and sometimes there's people that are slightly higher. So it's not a bad way to go about it. I just found that it limits overall conversions. And I think a better approach would be to understand what that number is for that platform and then go from there and then use it, versus the opposite way around of using it right away and having limited sets of data in there, getting less conversions. I think the other way around, the first way around I mentioned, is a better approach. But in theory, you're right. In theory, that makes 100% sense.
Right. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Many people, when they run Facebook ads, and it used to happen to me a lot, they would try to do what you suggested in your first approach, which is run your ads, and that will tell you what your cost of acquisition is. And I think at the beginning of the ads, particularly when Facebook is trying to figure out how best to optimize, you tend to basically overshoot whatever mental cost of acquisition you may have. And some people, and I, again, myself included in that, often then think, oh, this is like going completely out of control, the cost, and they just shut the whole thing down too early, maybe. Is there a too early to shut down that kind of discovery process?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you don't have a lot of Facebook data and you haven't had your pixel up for a while, then you're kind of in this territory where Facebook just doesn't have enough information to understand who your customer is or how to optimize your ads to reach that customer. And so I've seen tons of clients shut down ads within inside of the 2 week window. I understand and I get it. And like, you only have so much money to spend. Like, this is a fragile situation where, you know, you're out there, you're putting yourself out there, you're spending money, you're looking for something back. You know, maybe you're getting zero conversions. If it's early on in your Facebook journey, I can tell you that you need to keep at it and keep trying. Now, you could, instead of just shutting the ad down, you could optimize the ad, right? You could change some copy, change the audience, right? That's what I would focus on, is, okay, maybe it's not working after 2 weeks. So like, what can we add to this? What can we reflavor this as, and see then if we can get more results? But I would keep going rather than shutting it down. And I usually look at just around that 2 week period is kind of our sweet spot. So after a week, for some of our larger clients, it could be a week because they're spending enough money to get enough data back. But for most people, it's around 2 weeks. I'd really see that through and try to get as much data as I can and then make an adjustment from there.
It's an interesting point there about your Facebook pixel and data. Does it actually improve results if you've installed your Facebook pixel for a while and it keeps collecting data even when you're not running ads, rather than saying day one, I install my pixel, day two, I run my ads? So does it actually help for the Facebook pixel to be collecting data in the background even before you run an ad?
Yes, I believe so. The Facebook pixel, once it's set up, is people with a Facebook account that are running through that pixel, meaning if you have it set up on your website and somebody has a Facebook account and they hit your website, Facebook's going to collect that, put it into an audience, and store that. And so it's building up your available audience list, which in effect should help you, because then when you go and use that audience with one of your ads, then they'll be available to you. So yeah, it should. Having, especially for any website, I'd make sure that Facebook pixel is set up with, because it's going to be building these rich audiences for you. It's also letting Facebook know, and Facebook's creating kind of a profile for that customer. And so it's not the entire enchilada, but it's half of it. So it's once you start running ads and then you have these larger audiences, then you kind of get this cumulative effect of, okay, I have part of the audience. I understand who the audience is. And then Facebook starts to understand the other people it can show it to beyond that. And that's kind of where their, you know, magic comes in with the AI, their AI.
Okay. So good point there. So people should be installing that pixel as soon as they can. In terms of what you mentioned earlier on passing, when we were talking about how you determine your cost per conversion. And you said, you know, you may be getting fairly different cost of acquisition across two different channels. Say, you know, maybe your Facebook ads, you're getting people at $5 to convert for the same event. And maybe on Google ads, you get them for $2. Would your thinking then, you know, my simplistic thinking might be Google ads, I get two, Facebook ads, I get five. Let me throw all my money on Google ads. Is that too naive to think like that? Would you still be running, even at such a big differential in cost, ads on both platforms?
You'd still continue to run ads on that other platform because you would need to look at the overall volume of conversions. So for example, if I'm paying $15 on Facebook, but Facebook's driving me two times the conversions, then Google, I'm paying only $10. You could say, well, Facebook's sending me two times the conversions, but I'm paying $5 more per conversion. Like I said, in a perfect world, yes, I'd love to spend $10, but I'd also like to get 250 registrations and I maybe pay $5 more and I can foot that $5 more per customer, right? So it's like usually ends up being a volume issue where you're getting really pretty good volume from this other partner. You're having to pay that other partner a little bit more and you'll take that volume because you know it equals lifetime value and it equals people on the start line. It's still within your profit margin. Right? It's just a little bit higher maybe. And so that's typically why we stick with these other platforms too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Once the ad campaign gets started, what metrics and what KPIs do you personally want to be tracking and be monitoring and looking at to make sure that the campaign is still on track and is doing what it's supposed to be doing?
A couple of things we do is we try to set up when you're setting up a Facebook campaign on the first screen, the second screen after you choose your objective, then we choose the advantage campaign budget. We select that to on. It's the very bottom of that first screen. And it distributes budget across the ad sets to get more results. So what that means is if we have two different ad sets, which is basically two audiences, let's say audience number one is past customers that have run our race, and audience number two are potential customers that live in or around London that like the London Marathon and similar events like it, right? So they're two different technical audiences. What selecting on for advantage campaign budget does is it says where you're going to spend your total available budget against the ad sets that are performing the best. So if you spent it evenly, but one of those ad sets, let's say your past customer list, was performing way better than the other one, well, then you do yourself a little bit of a disservice because you're trying to spend evenly when really you should be trying to spend more money against the one ad set that's performing better. So what turning that little knob on does is you allow Facebook to spend your money in the area where you're getting the best return. That's why we use that.
And in terms of at the ad campaign level, you know, you'll be looking, I guess, at cost per conversion. Would you be looking at any other metric to basically just get a feel for how things are going or whether they're sort of like going off course? Maybe how many times people are seeing your ad or any of those metrics that you get there?
We're looking at cost per click, which is what you'd look at for kind of a more traditional ad, like a Google ad. And we're just making sure that you know, people are clicking on the ad at a feasible rate, and there's clicks and conversions. So very easily, like how many people are clicking our ad, how many people have seen our ad. And then return on ad spend is the big one. So what we're getting, return on ad spend is a metric that looks at, for every dollar that I spend on this ad, how many dollars do I receive in sales? And so in effect, you could look at it as return on, it's not really return on investment because there's other things, but it's return on your ad spend. And that's literally what the acronym is. And after a couple of weeks, we'll look at that, and it's taking into account, you know, the amount of conversions we've driven and how much sales we've driven from each of those, you know, against what we spent on the ad. So it shows, you know, if you have a 6 return on ad spend, that means you spent $1 on the ad and you got $6 back on sales.
And is that a good ballpark, the 6 that you mentioned there?
You want to shoot for around a 3 or 4. That's a good space. 6 would be really good. I mean, it'd be 600% return on your spend. Anything above a 6 is just absolutely fantastic. If you're in the 2 to 3 range, then that's okay. You want to try to get it up. I'd say 3 is a good spot. Spend $1, get $3 back. So most people are going to be around a 3 or 4. And if you're at a 3 or above a 3, then that's a feasible place to be for Facebook.
And if any of those metrics that you would typically follow seem to not be where you want them to be, particularly at the beginning, what other metrics basically would you look to troubleshoot that? Maybe try to basically debug the ad, you know, like where would you look to start making some educated guesses on whether that ad is working as it should or not?
Yeah, I mean, the first one we'll look at is which of the creatives we added are performing better than others. And then we look at which of the ad sets are also performing better than the others. And I guess the metric we would look at first is clicks, click rate. Because if it has a very low click rate, that's probably an indicator that it's not going to perform on a registration conversion level. That's the earliest on. It's click rate. What kind of like click rate are we getting? How many link clicks are we getting? What is our cost per click? You know, are we paying a lot for a click? So we look at that and it's like, if we're paying, $5, $6, $7 per click, well, that's much higher than we want to pay. And it also means that the ad's probably not performing with that audience. That's the first one. The second one is, how many conversions has it driven? Very simply, like if it has not driven many conversions after 2-3 weeks, and then our return on ad spend would be low at that point, then we need to take a look at that that audience and make an adjustment to either the audience or the ad creative. But the click rate tells me the ad creative is probably going to be a little bit of an issue. And then if there's, you know, we swap out the creative and then it starts to convert, then we're like, okay, it's kind of the creative. But if it's ultimately you do that, it's not still not driving registrations, well, then you have an audience problem. You have a targeting problem. You need to kind of fix the targeting and the ad creative as well.
Yeah, I guess it's not as straightforward to figure out what's happening, right? Because there could be, as you said, between the creative and the targeting, there could be a few things there. You know, I remember sometimes in the old days when I started out running Facebook ads, like way, way back, you would get very good click rates on some ads. But that was simply because, you know, like the audience I was targeting was so broad. Of course, you found some people in there, some really low-hanging fruit that would be clicking on anything, but then that got you nowhere after that in terms of conversions, right? And then you get some other ads where you have both a different audience and a different ad between two ads. One is performing well, the other one isn't performing well, and it's very difficult to figure out, is it the audience that's the problem or is it the ad that's the problem? So it takes a little bit of experimenting, I guess.
It does. Yeah, it's not the easiest process. I'd say one tip for folks to use, and we use this structure in our campaigns, we might have talked about this before, is setting up 3 different ad sets, one of them being your retargeting list. So people that have visited your website but haven't purchased, people that have visited your Facebook page but haven't purchased, I would set that up as an ad set that has typically performed well. And then setting up another ad set of people on your email list. Those are the kind of your warm leads that's going to perform well. And then the third audience is we set up top interests. So like, you know, interest like half marathon or 10K, 5K, and people that live around your target area. And so those are the 3 ad sets we set up. And just doing that itself is going to put you in a much better position to convert from the start versus trying to do a bunch of other testing and setting up all these different things. I would focus on that. That right there is going to drive more performance for 90% of the folks listening than doing a lot of the other stuff. And that's what happened with us several years ago. So we focus as a structure of our campaign on that each time we do it.
But high level, you would never, I mean, you probably wouldn't as a professional in this, but like you would keep encouraging people, even if things are not performing as well as they should, to just tweak things and keep reworking things and just keeping at it, right? It's not a good thing to just turn the campaign off and just, you know, like walk off kind of thing. I mean, you need to persist on these things.
Yeah, you do. You do. And that's what the tough part about it is. You have to accept that you might not succeed at first. But trust me, Facebook ads work. Like they work. they should work for you. You know, if you have an event that has people show up to your event, then you should be able to use Facebook to drive that. You just need to stay with it, stay positive, and know that if you can make adjustments to your ads and your ad sets, you will eventually find some success. And you write that down. The campaign that has success, best thing that you can do is make sure you document that and say, okay, because why did this have success? Well, let me look at this audience I did and let me look at the ad, right? And you can use that as a model. And that should always typically have a level of success that you can use as a benchmark, a baseline for yourself. And then you go from there. But yeah, you have to stay with it and it can be challenging.
Okay, so you spent the money on Facebook ads and got a good number of new people coming through to your website. Now it's time for your website to convert those people into paying race participants. One of the big ways you can help your chances in that is boosting your website's social proof, which is something we actually discussed with Andy in our previous podcast on marketing psychology. Basically, this means showing people coming to your site why other people like them loved your race. And there is no better way to do that than using RaceCheck's review box widget. With your RaceCheck review box, you can showcase all your glowing race reviews from RaceCheck's industry-leading race reviews database directly on your website. You get to instantly share with incoming visitors all that's awesome about your race and why your past participants loved your event. And by showing these glowing race reviews right at the point where people take an interest in your race, you can increase your website registrations by a massive 22%. That's a lot of participants to miss out on. And you know what? You don't have to, because downloading and installing your RaceCheck review box is absolutely free. That's right. All you have to do is head over to organizers.racecheck.com. That's organizers.racecheck.com. And you'll be able to download your free RaceCheck review box today, giving your race website the instant social proof boost it needs. Total no-brainer. Free widget, more registration for you. organizers.racecheck.com. Okay, now let's get back to the episode. Let's take a look now at retargeting. So we've touched on it in a few places. I hope by now most people listening in would have an idea of what it is, but in case they don't or it's still a little bit fuzzy, do you want to explain the concept briefly for people, how retargeting works in ads?
Yeah, retargeting is once you have your Facebook pixel set up, your Facebook pixel can kind of track where people are in the process and what they're doing. If somebody goes to your website and they try to sign up for your race, but they don't finish that process, Facebook can put them in an audience of people that got to your last page of registration but didn't sign up. And then you can run an ad and then target that group of people, which is what retargeting is. And so it's putting a message in front of somebody that you've previously interacted with. It's a very powerful, in fact, it's the most powerful thing in marketing is retargeting from a conversion standpoint. And you could imagine, so you're seeing a product or service that you very recently looked at. So it's fresh in your mind. It's also probably something you're interested in. And, you know, frankly, some folks just need more time to be able to purchase. And so that's in effect what retargeting is.
Yeah. What is it that they say? You need to see the same message a number of times before you purchase, right? There's nothing wrong with your ad, but like people have to see your race being marketed to them 7 or 8 times before they pull the trigger. It's just how things are.
Yeah. I think it actually is 7. I think that's the number. Like the 7 people need to see a message 7 or 8 times to actually convert. Like this is a metric across all things. Across, you know, all product lines and services. I think it is 7 or 8. So the idea that, yeah, you can just put one ad out and it works is not the case, especially if they don't know who you are. You have to reestablish retargeting with them and re-messaging with them to move them down to that 7, 6, 7 purchase spot, or at least the 3 or 4 spot.
Yeah, I guess some people, some race directors, you know, who do Facebook ads on their own, probably think that setting up a retargeting campaign is cumbersome and there's only a few people, because it's a little, you know, you need to create a custom audience, you need to basically think through this stuff a little bit more. And you're sort of, with a retargeting campaign, you're targeting very specific people. But on the other hand, that is the most likely audience to convert, right? And you have people who literally came to the end of your registration process and they abandoned it. So it must pay to target those people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, your warmest lead is somebody that got to your checkout, your actual checkout page, but then didn't purchase. That is your warmest lead. That's the ad that is going to convert somebody on first vision of that ad. Those people are going to sign up at a high rate. Well, we see this in the data, even post this iOS update, we have trouble retargeting against Safari and iOS users. The available retargeting audiences that are out there are still converting at a high rate with Facebook. And for good reason, they're right at your checkout page. They're right at the finish line. They've already had, let's say, 5 to 6 messages, right? Like they're at that 5 to 6 message mark at that point. They saw your email, they saw your ad, a couple other things. So that is the most profitable audience an ad to run on Facebook is a retargeting campaign. And it's for that reason.
It's probably, I'm guessing, also the best and the least money spent in terms of Facebook ads, because very few people get to that last stage in your checkout. And in terms of return on ad spend for those people, it must be massive because, someone got distracted, something happened, a kid walked through the door, they didn't complete their registration. You can just very easily target them on Facebook and you can clinch that sale by just showing them 1 or 2 more ads at a very small cost.
You're exactly right. It's a campaign that it's not going to cost you a lot because there's only a limited amount of people in that actual retargeting list, but it's a campaign that's going to convert at a high rate and it's probably going to drive the highest return on your ad spend money.
You need to have that basis covered, right? Before you start with anything else, just doing top of funnel, cold audience outreach, that kind of thing. You need to have all the stuff in place to be able to retarget the people who just happened to go through your website and your registration process.
Yeah, and this isn't specific to Facebook. On any platform that provides you retargeting capabilities should always be, based on our experience and my experience, your highest performing campaign in terms of return on your ad spend. And it's for all the reasons we mentioned. And so yes, it would behoove you to not have a retargeting campaign because Facebook is a platform that is providing the tools to do this. A lot of other avenues, they don't provide you the tool to do this, but Facebook does, and so you definitely want to take advantage of that.
Is technically targeting your mailing list or an email list of your past participants, does that fall under retargeting as well, or is it strictly people who register a custom audience on your Facebook pixel?
In a way, that is retargeting because if let's say you have a price increase message that you've put out last week. And then you have a Facebook ad that's congruent with that same message, then you're putting that ad out to that list. So technically, that's a form of retargeting because now I open my email and I see the message there. And then boom, I open my Facebook app and I see the message there. So in a way, you're kind of retargeting a little bit. Now, I would probably have a retargeting ad for that ad as well, though. So I get it's a second price increase reminder. That would be probably a truer sense of it, but in effect, that kind of is a way of retargeting.
And when you're using those retargeting ads, I know you made a point of that to me offline, and you make sure to stress that on some of your presentations. What you want to be doing, although I guess it's not the end of the world, but you do seem to feel quite strongly about this, is you want once someone that you've retargeted or targeted converts to being a registered participant, you want to be taking them out, somehow excluding them from your retargeting campaign so they don't keep seeing the come register message after they've actually registered, which can be a little bit annoying.
Yeah, that's a great point. So when you create custom audiences in Facebook, it allows you to create an audience of people that have purchased from you. And so what that allows you to do is create an exclusion audience, or we call them exclusion audiences. And we literally name the audience exclusion, people that have purchased from us this year. And then when you go and run a Facebook ad, it asks you, do you want to exclude anybody from this campaign? And we just select that audience. And so now, each of the people that have already purchased now are not going to see our future messages on Facebook about, that particular event, which you can imagine obviously saves you money. So you're not spending to go reach those people. And probably even more importantly, it's kind of a customer service slash, you know, you're not going to piss people off when they see a, maybe a deeper discount later, you know, that they got. And so it's kind of twofold, but you want to make sure that's a part of all your campaigns.
And those exclusion audiences, how do you upload them and maintain them? Like, do you just keep adding emails every couple of days, or is it done automatically? Do you maybe create another audience based on a pixel on a landing page after someone registers, and that's kind of like automatic? What's your preferred way of doing that?
We do two exclusion audiences just so we can try to get the most coverage. The first one is what I just mentioned. We create a custom audience in Facebook with the pixel, and we name it people that have purchased in the last X amount of days for this event. And we use the pixel. So if they purchased and they converted, Facebook can track that. And we say people that have purchased, and then they get it into an audience. So that's the first one. The second one is kind of the old school way to do it, is you can upload an email list of people that have purchased from you that year. And we do that for clients, usually after big price increases or promotions, but we do it basically weekly. And you can just continue to upload people from your registration platform in there. So we kind of use two audiences to try to make sure we get full coverage.
Okay, great. So one last thing I want to touch on the topic of retargeting is this lookalike audiences functionality. So I sort of get where Facebook is coming from that. Basically, from my understanding, these are audiences that Facebook tries to match people like the people that are in your custom audience with a broader set of people that is not necessarily in your custom audience, that Facebook guesses would be a good pool to convert from. Are they effective in your experience, lookalike audiences?
We've had varying success with lookalike audiences. Sometimes they're effective, sometimes they're not. I wouldn't look at lookalike audiences and say, oh, it's going to save me. You know, it's this amazing large group of people, because each event is typically geographically challenged, meaning you can only get people from a certain geographic distance out from your event. And so it actually limits the lookalike audience's ability to be successful. For like contrast, you know, an event with a product or service that isn't geo-dependent, a lookalike audience can perform really well because people could be in any state in any country. And if they have an affinity to that particular product, then that lookalike audience could expand and scale. But with an event, like I said, it's geographically based. So definitely I would test it out. But I would temper expectations around how much that can and will drive for you.
Yeah. In essence, you're saying that you have a great custom audience, say, to start with. And by switching on these lookalike audiences, Facebook might actually be diluting down your good audience into something that's broader and less effective, because it doesn't understand that, for instance, your event is meant to target only people in Atlanta. And then maybe Facebook, you know, sees some people in Atlanta and draws a lookalike audience that isn't really very effective.
Yeah, you want to try to create an audience or lookalike audience if you can, and make sure that you're understanding your geographic limitations or your geographic data. Like if you know that based upon your data that, you know, there's only these 8 states or 8 surrounding areas or areas that people actually travel from, then I'd make sure that my lookalike audience took that into account. Otherwise, it's just going to select people from certain regions or areas, maybe outside of your potential area, and that's just a wasted impression. And so you want to just make sure that you kind of take that into account. But I would test it out. I mean, test it out and use it, and just make sure you're taking into account that geo-specific stuff.
Okay, great. I mean, I think we've been between this discussion and the one on the previous podcast through a lot. I hope people have found it useful so far. One of the last questions I had for you, and we've covered a few already, common mistakes that people do when they run Facebook ads. And I'm thinking mostly of people who don't do this for a living like yourself. What kinds of things do you commonly see people doing wrong when they run Facebook ads and they can avoid or they can fix and improve?
One that I think is what I typically see is, well, we actually talked about it before, not having the date of the event in the ad. Save yourself some comments in the comment thread by just putting the date of your event and hopefully your event logo somewhere in your ad creative and copy. That's an easy, like, quick one that I just see that's so common out there. The other one that's more strategic is the thought might be, gosh, it's just going to take me so long to create, you know, all these different images and videos and copy. But what actually saves you time, because, you know, we're running ads for literally for our business, and we try to think about how we can be the most efficient with creating and managing ads. And so what we're doing is actually saving the most time, the process that we use. And the best thing you can do is lay out your campaign structure before you actually go create the ad. So, for example, write down just simply on a piece of paper your budget for the ad, your goal, the timeline or duration of your ad. Write your copy, actually write your ad copy before you go into Facebook, and create your creative. So create your video, and have that on a sheet or just somewhere, you know, on your computer, right? So all that structure is there, because trust me, if the ad works, you're going to want to make sure you had that structure somewhere. Number one, so you kind of have your cliff notes. Number two, when you actually go into Facebook and create the ad, you will create it 10 times quicker than if you're sitting in Facebook and you're trying to figure all that stuff out, right? You're literally typing it all in, like, ooh, should I say this? Should I say that? No. You should have all of that well thought out, written, and you can look at it, step back from it and say, okay, and really kind of, that is a strategic kind of hack. It's very simple. It's not really a hack. It's something simple that really not a lot of folks do. They're just trying to figure it out on the fly. So just plan it out in advance and have it ready. And oh, by the way, that's a template now, right? So what we find is, since we've had so many templates, we go back and we look at our old templates. And so we've kind of built out this system where we have all these beautiful templates of ad copy, creative. And so that gives us even more ideas and optimizes the next time we do an ad. That's what I would focus on, and I would say that you want to take a look at and do. And then the last one would be, you know, just make sure you're not shutting the ads down, you know, too soon, because guess what? It might not perform well that first week, but you need to give Facebook enough data to give you information to be able to make a decision on optimizing your ad. And the only way you can do that is by giving it enough data. And so leave the ad up 2 weeks minimum, and then, you know, take a look at things from there.
Yeah, it's like that cartoon or meme that goes around sometimes of the prisoner trying to escape, and he's digging that tunnel, and, you know, like, he's literally 3 feet from breaking out, and then he turns back because, you know, he just doesn't know that he's so close to the result that he wanted. And you can't know when you're in that initial stage. You just need to stick with it and just see it through at least a couple of weeks, as you said, just to let things work out for themselves, because the algorithm needs time to be effective.
Exactly. Yeah, especially if you haven't done a lot of Facebook marketing.
Cool. I'm going to close this on another question from our Raise Directors Hub group on Facebook from Robbie McClang, who I think is also a marketer besides being a Raise Director. And he says, this is a tough one. He says, where do you see the role of Facebook ads in marketing races in 3 to 5 years' time? Are people going to still be using Facebook ads in 3 to 5 years? Are they going to look different? Is it going to be as effective? Is it going to be less effective? What do you think?
The reason I think Facebook ads will still be effective at that time is because of the market that we work in. And we talked about this before, that a high percentage of the customer base that's in running is in the age category and bracket that Facebook's customer profile is in. So I believe it was like the 35 to 45 or 55 age group is where most of running, most of the participation comes in running. And so because Facebook has what you call an older customer, technically not, but like comparison to, you know, the 18 to 24, because Facebook has that profile, that user base still, that still ages out in 3 to 5 years. Now, with that being said, platforms change pretty quickly, and we are seeing a shift away from Facebook. We're seeing less user accounts created. We're seeing less usage on Facebook. It's still the second most used platform. So there's other platforms out there, and they're going to start to get market share of user bases. And we're already seeing it with TikTok. There's a lot of activity and engagement on that platform. I think Google's still going to be a big player because they own search. And so when you own, you know, the search experience, you're kind of going to be a player. But I do see less and less. I see Facebook becoming less important and critical to marketers, and maybe even potentially being harder to drive transactions on that platform because there is a slightly less user base. Also, Apple and Facebook don't play nice. And so this, the whole iOS thing is going to be a longer term problem because of retargeting. It's going to be harder to do that. I see the trend line going downwards for Facebook over time, unless they acquire, you know, I don't know, the rest of the world. But I do still see it being relevant in 3 to 5 years.
You know, funnily enough, I saw this post on Facebook 2 or 3 days ago, going over some of the things you mentioned, the iOS thing, TikTok, all of these headwinds that Facebook seems to have as a platform that are challenging its dominance. Let's face it, Facebook historically has had a reputational problem as well. Like, it's stirred a few issues in terms of trust and other things. And actually, lots of the comments on that Facebook post on Facebook about Facebook's demise were from Facebook users. And they were saying, oh, I would have deleted my account ages ago. It's useless, blah, blah, blah. But lots of people seem to be enjoying the groups and the community aspect of Facebook now. It's become a huge, huge thing on Facebook. You know, people are saying, people of our age or older, they would say, you know, like, oh, I don't bother with it. I don't write any updates or whatever. And it's only for close friends. But I have my golfing buddies in my golf group. Or, you know, like we have the Race Directors Hub group for Race Directors. Lots of people seem to just go there for the groups. And one interesting aspect of that is that groups are still not monetized, really, by Facebook. So, I mean, it's almost like Facebook is stopping short of doing what it did to your personal feed with what's happening in groups. If you go into a group, you only see group posts. You don't see stuff beyond that. And you need to wonder. And, you know, like, often you see people on groups about marketing asking, I would love to be able to advertise my products and target members in that specific group. And that can happen. You need to wonder whether Facebook down the line might open up that big opportunity, because most of the people still seem to just enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah, they do. You would know better than I would, because you have the Great Race Director group in there. And so people are very active and engaged. And once they're in there active and engaged, they're probably going to stay in there active and engaged. And it might be one of their better features. You know, a lot of people might even log in and use that and versus even trying to go through their feed. I think the feed is kind of, and I hate to say it, the feed is dead, but I don't know how relevant their Facebook feed is anymore. Right? I mean, there's Instagram that's a lot more relevant. You have the sidebars on Facebook. I see ads on there. I think their mobile ads are doing okay, but I think it's dominated by Instagram. And the feed seems to be just a lot different than it used to be. So, but yeah, it's an interesting take on groups. Maybe if revenue is slipping enough down the line, they do look at that, because I know that the advertising part of their business is why they're so big. We'll see when and if that changes, and if they look at groups for that revenue they're missing.
Well, I guess we'll be around, so maybe we can catch up on that in a year or two. In the meantime, I want to thank you very much for, I say it again, you give up your time very generously to our audience, and I'm sure they're very appreciative of that. And they've collected lots of tips from our podcast episodes. In case people want to reach out to you with questions, thoughts, maybe discuss getting some help on their own marketing through the Event Grow agency, how can they do that?
If anyone is looking to just chat about marketing, looking for help, looking for somebody to help them offload maybe a part of marketing for their business, I'm happy to chat. And I'd encourage you to reach out, marketing@eventgrow.com. That will get directed and I'll see that. So yeah, marketing@eventgrow.com. We work with several clients here in the US, all the way from running events to triathlon, different types of events, and even some other types of festival stuff in between, but mostly endurance. But reach out. My name is Andy, and I'd love to chat.
Awesome. Well, Andy, thank you very much again for your time today, for your time on the previous episode and the episode before that. I hope we haven't used too much of your time, and I'm hoping I can get you back to discuss some other marketing topic in the future. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Panos.
And to everyone listening in, thanks for sticking with us, and we'll see you all on our next episode. I hope you enjoyed today's part two of our Facebook ad special with EventGrow CEO Andy Riley. You can find more resources on anything and everything related to race directing on our website, racedirectorshq.com. And you can also share your questions on race marketing or anything else in our Facebook group, Race Directors Hub. Many thanks again to our awesome podcast sponsors, Run Sign Up and RaceCheck, for sponsoring today's episode. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to part one of my discussion with Andy on Facebook ads, you'll find that on our podcast's episode list. It's just the episode before this one. Until our next episode, take care and keep putting on amazing races.